The Choose Love movement offers no-cost solutions that keep our kids safe, providing them with the skills and tools they need to flourish. Join us in our mission to create the world we want to live in, one that's connected and compassionate. Check us out at ChooseLoveMovement.org. Together, we can choose love.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Choose Love podcast. I have such an incredibly special guest today. We're all going to learn a lot. Her name is Ross Ellis. She is a national expert on bullying, cyberbullying, racism, hatred, and LGBTQ discrimination. She is the CEO and founder of Stomp Out Bullying. Ross is nationally recognized and an expert for her work in bullying and cyberbullying prevention, violence against children, online safety, as well as being an expert in parenting. Ross has over 20 years of experience in the nonprofit and corporate sector and has been a child advocate for more than two decades. She educates on reducing and preventing bullying, cyberbullying, and other digital abuse, educating against homophobia, racism, and hatred, and deterring violence in schools, online, and in communities across the country. Additionally, she educates parents about the safety of their children. In 2005, Ross founded Stomp Out Bullying, the leading national bullying and cyberbullying prevention nonprofit for kids and teens in the U.S. Stomp Out Bullying has since become the most influential anti-bullying organization in the country. Under Ms. Ellis's leadership, Stomp Out Bullying has helped over 5 million youth in resolving bullying situations. She established a 24/7 help chat line for youth who've been bullied, cyberbullying, and at risk for suicide. To date, the organization has helped over 100,000 students and has saved over 2,000 lives. Through various network resources, Stomp Out Bullying has saved over 6,000 lives. These numbers increase daily, as do seemingly bullying incidents. Thank you so much for being with us, Ross.
Thank you for having me, Scarlett. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Ah, thank you. Well, this is kind of a loaded thing to talk about today, bullying. Kids bully each other. We bully each other as adults. I've definitely faced bullying publicly because of, the tragedy that I went through. Incredible that you're doing this. And I just want to thank you in advance because this is so needed. You and I have really the same mission, and that is to create a safer, kinder, more peaceful and loving world. We might be going about it just slightly differently, but what you're doing is really absolutely needed. And I'm just so
thank you. And I thank you for what you are doing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I like to say that I don't like to say it, but I say that Jesse was murdered in one of the most horrific cases of bullying. I consider what happened to Jesse, kind of over the top bullying, having a former student come back to his elementary school and perpetrate such a heinous crime, which, we see seemingly more and more of. It's kind of become I can't even say new normal anymore. You've been doing this over two decades. I've been doing this over a decade. And when I started, I was saying, this can't be our new normal. And today I can't say new normal because it is just kind of what it is. But you've been in it longer than me. What are your thoughts about where we are today?
It's a contagion behavior.
Contagion?
Totally. Every shooting, every school shooting, it's copycat. And of course, we're dealing with mental illness issues. And did the parent of the young man that was at Sandy Hook, did they notice that he had mental health issues? No.
She did. It was a single mom. She did. She tried to get her son help. And wasn't able to, the school wasn't helpful. She never really found the right mental health professional for her son. And, you know, she struggled. I really do think she did the best she could with the skills and tools she had, but obviously it wasn't enough.
Maybe so, but parents don't realize. We got an email today that from a woman, her son was being bullied, and she took him out of school because he threatened with a gun. Well, I said to Stephanie in the office, I said, answer her back right away and tell her she's got to go to the police. Don't pussyfoot around, because her son may be safe now. Maybe. We don't know that this kid doesn't know where they live, and he could go to the school. So everybody needs to, it does take a village. Everyone needs to get involved and make sure that this kid is getting help and that he won't hurt anyone. It breaks my heart to have to say that to a parent, but parents do need to worry. They really do.
It's kind of their job, and it's their responsibility, the safety, health, and well-being of children. And, you know, Ross, when I was a parent, I was a single parent of two boys. I understood my responsibilities as taking care of them while they were in my care. I was responsible, you know, for doing the parenting things, providing for them financially, feeding them, bathing them, playing with them, loving them. And then my thought was, when they went to school, the school was responsible during that time when I was at work. And then the responsibility shifted. And I really, truly focused on my two kids. That's my responsibility to help them grow into, you know, the best adults possible, productive citizens. But what I didn't realize is that they were always my responsibility, their safety, health, and well-being, regardless of whether they were with me or not. And the thing that I overlooked was that it is my responsibility for other children as well. That's because right. if you don't take that responsibility, then it could come back to bite you. Well, like it did me.
It could. I think that parents don't understand the issue of mental health. A lot of them don't, and the schools don't. I mean, every state in this country has anti-bullying legislation. Mm-hmm. Not all of them use it. The schools must enforce it, but they don't. I was in a meeting, and a principal called into the meeting, and someone put the call on the speaker. And he said, I have a bully at school and I don't know what to do. And everyone's, you know, you heard the noise in the room going. And I said, excuse me. First of all, invite the parents to your office and don't mention why. You just want to talk to them. Mm-hmm. When they get there, you know, Johnny is such an important part of our school community. We really like Johnny. Don't use the word bullying. Johnny has behavior problems and possibly some mental health issues. So we want to help you help Johnny. That's what the schools need to do. Instead of pounding their fists and saying, if Johnny doesn't stop bullying, he's out of school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably he should be, but we want to give that chance, the boy a chance to, or girl, change their behavior. Because some of them, their behavior can be changed. And a lot of it starts with, I know, I've seen it. So many schools do not teach empathy. Mm-hmm. They don't teach kindness. Empathy is so critically important. If something happens, you want a child to feel bad for the other child and go and help them. Don't stand around with your video camera taking pictures and putting it on YouTube.
And empathy can be taught, I might add.
Yes.
And obviously needs to be taught. So what you're saying, Ross, is don't immediately put the parents on defensive, because when you call them in for a bullying incident, that's what they're going to be. And they're going to be closed off. And then also show that you care as an administrator. That's a big one too.
Huge.
Yeah. Huge.
The schools are so good as sweeping it under the rug. Mm-hmm. And when I find out they're doing that, Well, what else are you doing at school? Granted, you're supposed to be educating the kids, but excuse my voice, but you're supposed to be teaching them the empathy and all of that. I have a neighbor who drives me crazy. His kids play basketball on my ceiling. And I said to my neighbor, my other neighbor, I said, this guy doesn't know from empathy. He has no nothing. And he's a doctor. So I said to her, I wonder if he has empathy for his patients, if he doesn't for his neighbors. People are not kind anymore. And especially since COVID, I don't know why, but since COVID, they're mean. People are all the Karens and all the male Karens, they're mean people.
That's so interesting. I have a theory why,
What is
and
that?
that it's because of fear.
Yeah,
We
they're
were
afraid.
pumped with fear. We were afraid we were not only going to die, but that we were going to kill our own family members. We're constantly being fed fear 24/7 on our phones. And it's so interesting when you look at the neuroscience of fear. It is literally like putting blinders on yourself. It's physically and figuratively putting blinders on yourself so you can only focus on what's straight ahead of you. And you are coming from your fear center in your brain. You're defensive, you're in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, you're not entirely, you don't entirely have access to your prefrontal cortex where logic and reasoning reside, where the brake on your instinctual reactions is, your executive functioning. So, in other words, if you're thrown into a situation, you're not going to be thoughtfully responding with love, which is what the Choose Love movement tries to teach, but you're going to be reacting out of fear. And,
Right,
you
but
know,
how long can you live with fear? How long? The rest of your life?
people do, right?
Not good.
It's not good. It's not good. We need to teach them how to thoughtfully respond with love, to slow down, to be in the present moment and realize that right now they're safe. And this is all social and emotional intelligence that are learned skills and tools. We're not born with them. We have to be taught them. And there are a lot of adults running around out there without them. And when I say that, though, I raise up my hand, Ross, because when Jesse was murdered, I was 44 years old. He wrote that nurturing, healing love message on our family's kitchen chalkboard. I literally took that message and went to a doctoral professor. I said, how do I enhance this in schools? Because obviously we need to. And he said, it's called social emotional learning. So I went
Still
to,
is fabulous.
yeah, I went to the director of curriculum in the Sandy Hook school system. And I said, have you ever heard of this thing called social emotional learning? And she said, of course. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, it never got out of the box because we didn't have enough money. But I realized when I went home that day, realizing that every child needs to learn these essential life skills of
Absolutely.
kindness, that it would have saved my son's life. And when I start looking into it, I realized I didn't have these skills and tools to give my son. I didn't learn them at home. I didn't learn them at school. I didn't learn them in a lifetime of working. So I got to be an adult, 44 years old, with two boys, single mom, not much relationship skills, honestly, not much emotional management. And I couldn't give what I didn't have. And so, I've delved into it. I've learned these skills and tools as an adult. My life is better. I know that it can reduce and prevent so much of the suffering that's out there. That's
That's
actually
right.
what the Choose Love movement advocates for, kind of a proactive, preventative approach, giving kids the skills and tools they need to manage the grievance before it escalates into an attack, into substance
Exactly.
abuse, into mental health issues. And you do you thankfully are on the other end, so there is a problem now. You have somebody that is in pain and taking it out on someone else. And what do you do?
Well, that's it. You try to teach them kindness, empathy. Parents should be teaching it, schools should be teaching it. It's so important. It's the basis, the foundation for everything else that we go along with in life. And to love. So we have a t-shirt that we sell, unapologetically kind. I mean, that's just so, it rings to me. It speaks to me.
That's one of your campaigns, unapologetically kind.
Yeah.
I was watching the video and I love that. And I think, I also think about how the way our brains are wired, and they're wired to defend us. They're wired for our survival. That's our brain's number one thing. It just wants us to survive. It doesn't care if we're happy, really. And really, it's so important to understand that and to use that to our benefit. But it does also lend to being judgmental, being critical.
Can't be judgmental.
Looking to be offended. But I mean, it's kind of the way our brains are wired. And this is what we're seeing. And this
right.
is kind of like
this
part
is
of the
what
reason
we learned
I think
as children.
It's what we learn, but it's also the way our brains are wired. And a lot of adults don't know this. So they're running around working from their fear center without much, social and emotional management. And it's a bad model for the kids who are watching this as well.
That's right.
This thing 24/7 in their back pocket.
Exactly. It's gotten to the point where families, you hand your kid a phone, $1,200 phone, here, have fun. You don't teach them how to use it and how to be digitally responsible. So parents have to teach that to their children. They've got to teach them, most importantly, kindness, empathy, and love. Those are the three things that will build character for that child to grow and be a kind person.
Totally agree.
Yeah, we're right next to a school, and I see the kids come out, and we have a National Culture Week, and the kickoff event is Culture Shock. And I founded this because I saw three boys in the street fighting and yelling, oh, he's a terrorist, blah, blah, blah. And I had to say something because I just couldn't keep quiet. And I said, who's a terrorist? A kid in our class. I said, why? Does the school know? How is he a terrorist? He wears a turban on his head. And I thought I would just choke. And I said to them, guess what? He's not a terrorist. That's his culture. And when different cultures wear different clothing, they have different habits and rituals. You can't look at someone and just say they're a terrorist. So that's something we need to teach our kids at home too. This event, which is my favorite, we have a celebrity panel of different, someone might be gay, someone might be a transgender person, different races, and we have a celebrity moderator. And they talk about what they went through as kids. And we live stream this to schools all over the country and even beyond. And ABC here in New York live streams it to their top 8 markets.
That's
and
awesome.
It's so great because, yeah, people are learning. Because you just can't look at someone. How can you say they're a terrorist? Have feeling for that person and learn what their culture is. Learn who they are. Maybe you'll invite them to have lunch with you in the cafeteria. But kids don't think that way. And we need to teach them.
Well, that takes courage, right? Absolutely. Especially if you're coming from a household where those are the thought processes and you're trying to understand what the right thing is to do. So is that why you started the organization? You saw that bullying incident or why?
No. I actually started a child abuse prevention organization. Very sadly, and I say this so true, people don't care about child abuse. We couldn't raise enough money to do anything. And one day the phone rang and someone said, I'm being bullied. And I said to myself, well, I was bullied as a kid, but it's been happening for years. And cyberbullying didn't have a name then. So I spoke to some experts, put the information up on the website. 2 days it crashed. And I knew that we had to focus on bullying and cyberbullying. And as things progressed in the world, we had to really focus on hatred and racism and homophobia. It's so important. So that's how I founded Stomp Out Bullying in 2005. And
Okay.
I'm thrilled that I did.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. So many the people whose lives you saved are thrilled, and their families. What are the so to me, it kind of seems like bullying is increasing, and
It
obviously
is.
not just okay, it is in schools and then out on our streets because you read about it every day, and of course most of the news is focuses on the negative anyway because fear sells. But
Right.
so we I guess we talked about why it's increasing, but it is increasing because sometimes, you know, I do this research on the internet and I get kind of conflicting messages and percentages, and sometimes it looks like amazingly it's going down, but it just doesn't make common
Don't
sense.
believe everything you read on the internet.
There you go. Right. Totally agree. And I know that there are a lot of anti-bullying programs. I also know that a lot of them aren't effective, are not
Right.
effective. I
That's right.
actually interviewed a woman who wrote a number one bestseller about being bullied. And she said the days that her school taught the anti-bullying programs were the worst days for her because they would literally teach the bullies techniques. And
Right.
then she knew that they were going to turn around and use them on her. And they did. Like, you know, they would learn, oh, some bullies shove people in lockers, and that's what they did to her that day. And so, I know there are tons of anti-bullying programs, and you know, you don't use, or I didn't see on your website, and even the name is Stomp Out Bullying instead of like anti-bullying, like this double
Right,
negative. And
right.
so why do you think that they don't work, and what is the difference in what you do?
Started going to schools and talking to schools, and the only schools we now go to are with the Jets because it's the only one we're partner with the New York Jets. That's the only time the kids will pay attention if there's a New York Jets standing there. And
That's
I'm
awesome.
thrilled because it is an organization that has so much heart. I just love them to death. I said I wish I could be a New York Jet, but other than that, we don't go to schools anymore. Why? Because the kids are on their phones. They sit and giggle and laugh, and it's wasted energy. They don't
Interesting.
listen. They
Wow.
don't hear it. It's a band-aid. It's a 1 or 2 hour band-aid that you go to the school and you do your whole spiel, and then the next day they're back to bullying. It's just a band-aid. So instead, we decided to do campaigns like National Culture Week, like Blue Shirt Day, where you can participate. The kids, they want to feel good about doing something, so they'll all wear blue shirts and they'll make the day that bullying is heard around the world. We have a great campaign called See Me. Different kids from different backgrounds, and they have a hand over one eye, and they say, "See me," and you look, and there's a kid from another race saying, "I'm going to be the president of the United States." Someone else says, "I'm going to be a fashion designer, and everyone's going to know who I am." And they talk about their different goals, because people look at them and think they can't do that. Well, why not? Why can't they? So we have that campaign. We want to empower them, and empowerment is so important. But give them the compassion, the kindness, the love. They need to understand that what anyone can be anything they want to be. And if someone says you can't be, well, I don't believe it. I really do not believe it. If you have a goal and you work hard, there was a boy who just got accepted. I think he was like 14 years old, and he got accepted to 27 colleges.
Wow.
27. And he's going to be a doctor. He wants to be a doctor. And I started crying. I said, "Good for him.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. We can do anything we want as long as it's the right way. But if we take it the wrong way and take it like, go and say, you and I could go to a school and we could talk, talk, talk. It's a band-aid.
So when did you see this shift? Because you used to go into schools and now you don't, unless you're accompanied by a Jets. Go Jets. Really incredible organization, but when did you see that shift?
I saw it maybe about 2018.
Okay, so did it align with COVID?
Not really. I
Okay,
mean,
a
oh,
little bit
we
before.
did, but you know, we had to, what we had to do is teach them how to act online, because a lot of them would sign on to school, leave, and then come back when school was over.
Right.
Mom and dad were working,
Right.
and so, well, they didn't care.
Right.
Teachers said, teachers told us, we're lucky if we have half the class there.
And a lot of
That's
kids haven't come back. Millions haven't
right.
even come back.
Yeah, today's a snow day, and they're supposed to, here in New York, they're supposed to be online. I don't think so.
Right.
I doubt it.
Right. So you
But
think that anti-bullying programs today don't work because the kids don't take it seriously and they're not really listening. Is that why you think they don't work?
they don't listen. First of all, the word bully is used, so overused.
Yeah.
It is. I went to a dentist and he wanted to do something, and I said, no, I don't really want that. He called me a bully.
What?
And I, because I wrote him a nice email saying, I appreciate the time you gave me. I really don't want to go the route you're taking, but I thank you for your time, blah, 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 blah. So he ends up, you're not my kind of patient. You're a bully. And I couldn't help but get hysterical laughing.
Yeah, wrong person, buddy.
Right. So, but adults are notorious for calling every single person a bully.
Yeah.
And it's a term we should never use anymore.
Yeah, it takes the
Because it
sting
doesn't
out.
work.
And I don't like labeling somebody a bully. We don't use the word bully in any of our materials. And I don't like labeling somebody a bully because they are a human being in pain. If you're bullying, they may do bullying behavior, but they are humans, not bullies.
Yeah, they need behavior management. What we just did is we have a new program, and I'm very excited. We created wellness rooms in schools. Our second one, we did one in the Bronx, and in 2 weeks, we're going to furnish the one in New Jersey. And we totally donated the furniture, the sensory materials, everything, so that if a kid is, terrified or being victimized and they really had it, or a kid has mental health issues, they can go in this room that's supervised by someone at the school, and they can decompress. Because if you're at school and you're dealing with all this crap, and then you're trying to focus on education, not easy. But if you have a place in school where you can go for a half hour and just decompress, you will go back to your class and feel so much calmer. And I think that's so important. We will do this for any school that wants this throughout the country. All they have to do is apply.
Whoa, that's amazing. What is the room called?
Wellness room.
Wellness room. Okay. I like that label, wellness room, because I've heard it called brain break room. I've heard it called a couple of different types of things, and I mean, with there's such a focus on the stigma around mental health, and asking to go to the wellness room is different than, basically announcing to your class that you need a break, right? Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And from the first school that we did this for, they say it's working and they love it. I mean, someone wrote to us and said, can we have a prayer room? Well, no, not for us. You can't. You can do it for yourself. Everyone prays differently, and some people don't pray. So I want to help the kids that are hurting and give them that time to decompress. Everyone needs it. You and I need it. We all do. So it's very, very important. And we're working with a great company, School Outfitters. They help us furnish the whole room. And I made them, it's funny, I made the teacher take a the TV out of the room, the gaming.
Good.
I said, none of that stays.
Yeah, so
because
good.
That you can't decompress with that.
Right, exactly.
So we bring in all kinds of sensory materials and sensory games and things that they can really calm down with. Coloring is a great form of sensory. You know, they can sit and color and paint. And we have like motivational signs all over the room. It's just, I love it. It's the room that the small room we did, and it used to be a closet. You can see pictures of the room. It came out so cool. So I want to do this for anyone, any school that wants it, from fifth grade up, because the lower grades, it's hard for lower grades, but from fifth grade up, we'll do it. And it's important.
That's
so
amazing.
every you know, I love it. I love it. I really do. I mean, I just wish that we could teach everyone to love. And I don't mean love it in a relationship, but just love themselves, love their friends, love their teachers. I mean, you've got a kid who goes into a school and chooses teacher.
Who's six?
6 years old.
Yeah, in Virginia.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I was on Facebook. And the question was, do you think this mother and father should go to jail for their son shooting? And I said, yes. And everyone went after me. But I think it's time that the parents are responsible, because why, they knew he had a problem. Why did they give him a gun?
Right. Or Lee, I think in that case, they left their gun unsecured where a six-year-old could find it. They said, you know, it was way up there, but don't think, you know, your kids are listening to everything that you say. They know everything that's going on, and they know every place that you've put your stuff. And so you as parents are responsible. I know in the Ethan Crumley trial, Ethan Crumley was the school shooter in Ohio who had written on a piece of paper in his classroom, "Please help me, there's blood everywhere." He'd drawn a picture of a gun. And the teacher saw him with that, took him to the principal's office. The parents were called in and they declined to take him home, even though everyone there knew that they needed, that Ethan needed immediate mental health help. And so they declined to do that. The parents, I don't know as much about the dad, his trial hasn't come yet, but the mother supposedly was out and partying during the weekends with the father. The father was gone as well, leaving Ethan to home alone, often going to neighbors to beg for food. This is, you know, a young boy left alone. And I think she called herself a helicopter parent. Maybe if the helicopter was 20,000 feet up and nowhere near her son, but, you know, really kind of the same response. People asked me what I thought about that. I thought that was a good thing. Parents, you know, hey, wake up, because you are responsible for your children. And clearly there was neglect there. And guess what? If your child takes the gun that you gave him and, you know,
what do you think is going to happen?
I think he was 14, and you neglect him, you abuse him, and he winds up going to school and shooting his classmates, you're going to be held accountable. And I think that was really
absolutely
good. I'm glad that was front page news, because I think it'll wake people up about gun storage and you know, how they treat their kids. You know,
it's so
really
true.
Important.
Let's
look
at Columbine. I mean, Columbine, I believe, was the first one that started. And since then, it's been all contagion behavior.
All contagion
a kid
behavior.
It, a kid hears about it in the news. Mm-hmm. online. Oh, okay. So they went into school with guns and they shot everyone. Well, I can do the same thing. No,
and
you
guess
can't.
What? Guess what? People paid attention when they did that. People actually saw them.
Right.
So I go and I speak to school shooters, and a lot of people think that that's nuts. But I think, who better to talk to about why they did what they did, and what needs were left unmet, what we could have done to keep them from doing
right.
that, And I'll tell you, after speaking to several, I mean, I've done podcasts, I've had a book club, and I've spoken to them and asked the questions that I think we should all be
And
asking.
what did they say?
I will say that really, if I had to boil it down to one word, it would be seen. You know, that they say everybody wants to be safe, seen, and celebrated. And I would say that these kids did not feel seen. And it was so interesting because by the way, they all cried out for help. They and you know, it's not in the formal way that we think, excuse me, Ross, I think I'm having a mental health crisis. Could you please get a psychiatrist for me? It is writing something. It is posting something. All of them. And one of them actually even went into the school and asked their guidance counselor for help, and she put him back together with his abusive parent. I mean, so they all asked for help, and they were never provided with any help. And all their you know, the stories that they would write and turn in, and the drawings that they would make that were obvious to anybody to see, nobody ever really responded appropriately. And I know that one even said, I remember that I would leave a room and I would wonder if anyone would ever remember I was even there.
There you go.
I spoke to Nicholas Cruz, who was the Parkland school shooter in Florida. And he, in fact, that anniversary is coming up. He said that he would bring his mom's wine bottle, or not, I'm sorry, he would fill his water bottle with his mom's wine, bring it into school, and just carry it around with him. And I said, well, why would you do that? Were you drinking it? And he said, no, I wasn't drinking it. I was just wondering if anybody would ever notice. And I said, did anybody ever
Said
notice? He
no.
said, no. And he said, too, I would be the guy in the back of the classroom. I would have on a sweatshirt. I'd have the hoodie on. And basically, he said he felt so ashamed of himself that he didn't feel like he was worthy of being seen, but he was desperate to be seen. He was the one that was bullying the teachers and the kids because he just wanted to do it for attention. And I think if we understood that, like part of what I want to do is make people realize, and my philosophy over my last decade of work is that there are two kinds of people in the world. There are good people. And I would say you and I are good people because we are trying to be part of the solution every single day we get up, even though sometimes it seems like we're pushing a rock up a hill, we still get up and come to work, right? So good people. And then there are good people in pain. I'll get tons of texts if there's a school shooting. I know that it goes on because I look at my phone and my phone blows up with words like monster, evil, you know, and they're calling this person that. And my view is what they did is monstrous and it is evil, their actions, but they are human beings in pain. And I think if we saw them like that before, and we acted with compassion and caring, as you said, make them feel like they're cared about, there would be much less likely for them to do this. I know Aaron Stark, who has a viral TED talk called "I Was Almost a School Shooter," and he now works with law enforcement. It's an incredible story. And by the way, if he can turn it around, anyone can turn it.
Anybody again?
He has such a horrific story, but he said a quote that has never left me, and I talk about it all the time. But towards the end of our podcast, I was saying, "Gosh, Aaron, the systems and processes that have to change, you know, in order to fix things, it's just sometimes so overwhelming." And he said to me, "No, Scarlett, you are 100% wrong. It has nothing to do with systems and processes. It has everything to do with our ability to give love to those we feel deserve it the least." And I was like, wow, that's it.
It's true. It's true. I'm looking for a dog. I want to adopt a dog or buy one if I have to. But so when I'm sitting and eating dinner at my desk, so I can go back to work, I watch these YouTube commercial YouTube things, videos where they find a dog in the street, and this guy Rocky Kanaka goes into the kennel, and he talks to the dog is completely shut down, and he talks to the dog and he says, You don't deserve this. I don't know what you did, but you didn't deserve this. And I love you and you're a good girl and you're a good boy and all this stuff. Well, by the end of the video, this dog is sitting scooped up in his lap, kissing him. So what does that say? We will do that for an animal, of course. We need to do it for our kids.
Yes. It's
I look at that all the time. And I love his videos. And I just think, my God, you know, if parents could see this, when your kids are shut down, don't walk away. Don't throw a phone at them. Give them love. Teach them empathy and compassion. It sounds so easy, but that's what they need. Be kind.
It is what they need. It's what Jesse wrote on our kitchen chalkboard. It's what I realized the solution was when I found that. We need more love. That's why I named the organization Choose Love, because it is a choice if you know how to do it. But still, you know, out there, we have a lot of bullying. You know, so I wanted to ask you a question that I've received when I'm out and about, because I too work in schools. And I've had a couple of times, you know, we do kind of simulations, and we have this choice moment where if somebody does something that hurts you, you pause in the choice moment in between what's happening and your response. You have two choices. You can react out of habit or memory, or you can thoughtfully respond using this formula that we have, which is courage. Obviously, it takes courage to pause anyway, especially when somebody's not being kind to you. Then the formula is gratitude, forgiveness, compassion in action. So you get curious when you pause. Somebody said something that's not kind. You pause and you get curious about what their point of pain might be. And you may not know, but what you do know is that if someone's not being kind, they don't feel good on some level, because people that feel good are kind. It's easy to smile. You are feel, you know, more self-confident and have higher self-esteem. If you are not kind, you are not feeling good. So even if you don't know what their exact point of pain is, you know that they're not feeling good, which then you can choose. Because you've given, by the way, your fear center is four times faster than your prefrontal cortex. You've given your prefrontal cortex a little bit of time to come online, which then you can choose maybe to forgive, knowing that they're coming from a point of pain, and maybe even compassion. Like, hey, what happened? What can I do for you? This isn't normally how you show up, or something like that. But so in my talks with kids, I'll have hands go up and say, well, what if you tried that? And it doesn't work. And I say, well, you know, then you walk away, or, you know, you tell a trusted adult, what if you did that? And it didn't work. And then, you know, what do you say to somebody who has tried that, has some social and emotional intelligence, some awareness, they've tried, they're still in this situation, and it's really hard for them. It gets harder. They feel weaker because everything they try doesn't work. What do you say to those people?
I mean, we have comebacks and they work. I swear to God, they work. If someone says to you, I hate that jacket you're wearing, or it's ugly, or you have ugly sneakers, or whatever, you look at them and go, so? And walk away. Do not have a conversation. Or, gee, that's all you could think about today, my sneakers. Walk away. Don't have a conversation. You're then empowering yourself and taking away the bully's power. Because you left them standing there, and they're like, huh, I just insulted them.
Right. And by the way, that's not just for kids, right? That's for big kids too.
Yeah, adults, I'm afraid. On our Facebook page, we have adults that, oh my God, I was bullied as a kid. My life will never be the same. Kids, if you're listening, and I don't want that message going to kids.
No.
I want kids to know that it will get better.
Yes.
One day it will get better. Maybe not today or tomorrow. But to give a kid a message saying it's never going to get better, no, I don't accept that.
Well, no way. And it takes away hope. That is not good.
Right. So I've given our social media person permission that whenever she sees that, delete. And that's from adults. You know, adults, for some reason, adults can't let go. I was bullied in the workplace one time, and I wasn't sure how to handle it. But then I said to myself, okay, if I say something, she's just going to continue. If I say something, I'm going to, you know, it's going to get worse. If I quit, even though I need a job, and most some people can't quit, they just can't do it. But I said, if I quit, even though I need a job, at least this will be out of my life. And I did quit. And it was the best thing I ever did because look where it brought me. So it's, you know, and I won't tell everyone to quit because some people can't afford to do that. But it's so important. Never let them see you sweat. The more you let them see you sweat, the more they're going to attack you.
The more power you give them over you.
That's right.
Yeah. So is there a difference between childhood bullying and adult bullying?
Adults don't know how to handle it. Kids handle it much better. When
Isn't
we
that
teach them,
interesting?
yeah, when we teach them the comebacks and what to do, it works. But when you tell an adult that, oh no, I can't do that. My boss will fire me or something. Well, if your boss is going to fire you, do you really have a great job? Is he a great boss? It makes no sense. They just go on and on. And instead, I'd rather see them get into therapy if they can't handle it.
Yeah, isn't that, it
I mean,
seems like kids are more resilient at times than adults.
they are
Yeah.
totally. And it's just, that's why, and even very young kids can't understand it. That's why we only work with kids 13 and up. It, you know, we,
Oh.
yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll take it, you know, we'll start at 11, depending if on the maturity of the kid. But when a kid is online and they have someone sending them a negative message, I'm sorry, there are 7-year-olds on Facebook.
I
What
know.
7-year-old has the maturity to understand that negative post and how to handle it? They don't know how to handle it. So it's really important. All these Facebook, all of these sites, you have to be 13 and older. You really should be 18, the age, I think.
Well, that's what
But
the founders of all of those sites and everything, they don't let their kids go on until they're 18, which tells you something, right? Because they know. Yeah. And that's how you've had to pivot. So within the last 20 years, the online bullying has proliferated, is this new thing that is 24/7. And so you've probably had to adjust pretty dramatically in order to deal with that in your organization.
Yeah, I mean, there are kids that take their phones to bed. Now, I don't know, if I had a kid, the phone would not go to bed with them at all. And when, you know, we always tell kids, and when we talk to them, we have a help chat crisis line. And because of the COPPA laws, they have to be 13 minimum to go and talk to our volunteer counselors so they can get help there. But if someone's bullying you online, don't respond. Don't give them that power.
Yeah.
Don't answer it, delete it, and then block them. We created National Block It Out Day every November 14th. We tell kids, block them out, delete them, but pay it forward. Tell your parents, tell your friends, everyone you know to do the same thing. We reached 4 million people last year.
Amazing. We want to help this coming year. Get that
Oh,
message
we'd love
out.
it. We'd love it. Yeah. It's I'm so excited that kids are listening because it's so important. Why, you know, react to a negative message. So then you really get into trouble because you've lost your power. You're going home and you're not doing your homework. You're not seeing your friends. You're not doing what you would normally do. But if you get rid of them, block them, don't answer. No matter what they say, don't answer. It could be the worst thing in the world. I mean, the newest thing in the last couple of years, girls, go kill yourself. This is what they're telling other girls. And I looked at, I was at a school actually where I was talking to the principal and a group of girls, he called them into the office. And I said, what would you do if someone said, go kill yourself? And they said, oh, gee, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do. And I said, I do. And they said, what? I said, I'd laugh. No one on this green earth has the right to tell me to go kill myself. Nobody, not my parents, not anybody.
But you know what, Ross? In order to be able to laugh, you have to feel good enough about yourself. You have to have some level of self-esteem. And there's a statistic out there. I don't have a citation for it, but it says 85% of Americans lack self-esteem. And that would be the self-esteem to hear something like that and not take it personally.
I could never take that personally because these people don't know me.
Right.
How do they know if I'm struggling with something and then maybe I'm going to go home and I'm really going to think about killing myself? There's a girl in Florida who she listened to the girls and she jumped off a building. 13 years old, I think she was. You may be suffering from something, maybe you're not. Either way, no one has the right to say that to you.
Right. For sure.
No one has the right to be mean. I mean, if you look at that girl, the woman in Central Park, who this guy was bird watching and he wanted her dog to get out. Go walk your dog somewhere else. And she wouldn't. She called the police. This black man is harassing me. This is what she said. She lied. Well, she lost her job. And the stupidity, how could you do that? Have a conversation with the man about putting your dog on a leash and taking your dog away from the bird watching area.
Right.
But to call the police
Right.
and say that, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just escalation. And I think that it speaks to a little bit of where we seem to be as a society today, which is blaming, finger pointing, fault finding,
shaming.
Shaming, not taking responsibility for ourselves. And that's a dangerous road to go down.
It's very, very. A friend of mine wrote the book Shame Nation. And it's so true. I mean, why do you have to shame people? For what reason? I wouldn't want someone to shame me.
To make yourself feel better?
Right? I mean, look, I know I have a weight problem. Do I want someone to tell me, oh, you're fat and say something rotten and miserable to make me feel worse? I don't feel bad about it. I know I have to do something about it, but I don't feel bad about it. But there are people out there who will try to make me feel bad about it. And that's just what kids do. And that's why these comebacks are so important. And if a kid is shy and can't come up with whatever, you know, to say, they can just look at the bully, and I shouldn't call it a bully, but look at that person and laugh in their face. Because again, you're taking away their power. The more empowerment a child can have, the better. And if parents aren't teaching them to be empowered, then there's something really wrong.
So what do you say to all of the educators that are listening to this podcast across the country, administrators, parents? Those are mostly the people that are listening. They have anti-bullying programs because they are paid for by the government. I don't know how efficacious they are. What would you say that they need to do in order to create a culture of kindness, inclusivity, love, compassion, belonging
to them? Put it into your curriculum. It doesn't even have to be in the curriculum. Just good morning on the when they announce on the microphone every morning, school day is going to be blah blah blah, and I hope you guys have a great day. You're worth it. You're good kids. Have a wonderful day. Doesn't that make a difference?
It does. It does.
You know, and I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Bully. There was a kid who was bullied all the time. And there was another kid who was really terrible behavior. And the vice principal brought them together and said to the person who was doing the bullying, now you apologize to Nicholas. That was the boy's name. And so he apologized. He didn't mean it, but he did it because the vice principal told him. Now, If he had had compassion and empathy, would have understood how Nicholas felt and would have meant it. So when he walked away, the vice principal said, "So, Nicholas, do you feel better?" He said, "No, you made it worse." And she did,
Oof.
because you don't put them together.
Oof. Which goes back to how we started. It is so important that we teach these essential life skills like relationship building, emotional management, responsible decision making, empathy, courage, gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, all these things that we have to learn, that our parents can model, but sometimes school is the first time that these kids are getting that. And then you can't just
Exactly.
learn it, you got to practice it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So
It's so
powerful.
true. It's so true. But every letter or every email that I sign, I try, unless I'm like crazy busy, but I, especially corporate donors and all of that, I always sign with an abundance of gratitude. I mean it. It's not thank you so much. Yeah, we thank them, but I want them to know how grateful I am. And it's so important. And I don't think kids really learn gratitude. Maybe they'll get a puppy for Christmas. Maybe they'll get the trains that they wanted, or a car, or whatever. I got a car when I was 16. I was grateful, but not grateful enough. I felt like I deserved it. I didn't deserve it. I got it because I wanted it, and that was it. But had I learned more about kindness and compassion and gratitude, it would have been a totally different scene.
Yeah,
Totally.
I totally agree. I totally agree. It can totally change your life and change our world. It has the possibility, but we all need to step up right now and work on this together. Not stop, can't wait for somebody else to come in and fix this for us because nobody's coming. This is going to be you and me. So, Ross, if you have some final advice, words of wisdom that you could leave for everyone listening, that would be very much appreciated.
I mean, try not to use the word bully, number one. Number two, sell is so important, social emotional learning. But teach gratitude, love, empathy, compassion. If you can do that every day, even once at school and then at home, it can't be just one place. It's got to be both places. And if it's a home that's a war zone, then do something for that child and make sure that they are removed from the war zone, not taken away from their parents, but taught to love, because otherwise those kids are going to grow up to have a war zone of their own, and they can't, because it won't serve them. It doesn't serve anyone in life to be mean and cruel. So I hope that everyone that's listening is grateful, will teach children gratitude. Love, compassion, empathy is so critical. And I
All of
thank you
that.
for having me.
Yeah, all of that. And I'm smiling because I know that there are a lot of Choose Love educator listening and they're saying, "Oh, that's exactly what I do every single day with the Choose Love movement."
Hey.
And I love everyone that's listening. Thank you so much, Ross. It's been so amazing to talk to you. Thank
Oh,
you for
thank you.
this incredible conversation. I would like to work with you going
I would
forward.
love it. I would love it.
Yeah, so let's partner on some things so we can get more awareness and more people involved and more people stomping out bullying and choosing love.
Choosing love. Mwah.
Awesome. Yeah,
Thank
thank you
you for
so
having
much.
me.
Thanks, Ross.
Hey, oh, it's all part of us. We can all choose love. It'll lift you up if you let it in. Let the healing.